thought about it, Mary. I even started wearing my mask again.
Mr. Lovey, are we fine in terms of quorum so that we can start? Not sure whether I'm audible enough. We're experiencing load shedding in Acacia, so we may have challenges of network. Are we correcting in terms of the members of the portfolio committee?
No, I don't think we are.
Okay, Honorable Sewister, Honorable Hicklin, Honorable Van Schalvik, guys, please assist me. I
There's
can't see it.
only five.
We are five.
Chair, one, two,
Is
three.
Honorable Matebula in?
No.
Honorable Mashe?
No.
Honorable Zondo? Honorable
No. Honorable Tring,
I
Honorable
do
Van Schalkwyk, Honorable Sewister, Honorable you and me.
have. So we four.
Five now, Chair.
Okay, let me try to call them and check because we can't start if we are not correct. I'm sure some are going to experience the challenge of connectivity.
Matapelo, Sharon, Wayne. There's six of us. There are six members, Chair, but only you and Sharon from the ANC, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, is it not possible that they're having challenges with the link that was sent? Because the first link that was sent by Luazi, I had a problem logging in. The one sent by Shweb was the one that I used, and I didn't have a problem with that one.
It's the same link, Honorable Trink, but Lwazi was experiencing some problems earlier on of opening the Zoom platform. So we only just joined now because that has been resolved. He had some problems. Let me check the members.
Chairperson.
Mr. Shea?
Chair, good morning.
Are we correcting now?
Yes, if we have six members, we can go ahead, Chair.
Okay. There is someone who is asking whether he can be allowed to come in. Honorable members, though I'm not sure whether opening the video will assist me, but okay, I will try to do that because all our meetings are recorded. Honorable members of the portfolio committee, Minister Zikalala, Deputy Minister Swart, Acting DG, Ms. Makhubela, and all the DDGs that are here with you, our team from Parliament, Mr. Lwazi Ben, the Acting Secretary, Mr. Shoaib, our Cornell Advisor, Ms. Inez, our researcher, Ms. Tabi, and Ms. Khadija, and all those that are watching our portfolio committee today. Greetings to you all. Honorable members, today we will be dealing with the third quarter and fourth quarter performance of the department. We have already dealt with the first and second quarter reports, so we will be dealing with the two reports today to see and follow up playing our oversight role. How is the department performing on its commitments, on its plans, as it continues to do its work? We have to do that, but also like to appreciate honorable members that conducted ourselves yesterday when we were dealing with the budget vote report. vote number 13 of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. I always appreciate being part of this committee on the way that we always present ourselves when we are in the public platform and also in the committee itself. I really would like to appreciate, yes, we may have differences, we may be coming from political parties, but one thing that we have is an honest responsibility of presenting our political views and the South African people whenever we have or deliberate on what the department is presenting to us. So I really appreciate all the work that you have done yesterday. We will then apologies. Lwazi, it is indicating on my side that the network is unstable. So I will have to switch on the video when we start with the meeting. And do you have any apologies, Lwazi? Do we have any apologies?
Apologies from Honorable Selo, who's gone to his grandmother's.
Honorable members, as I have indicated in the group that our colleague Honorable Selo has lost his grandmother. And he indicated even to me that he won't be part of this today's meeting because he will be traveling, going home. We send our sincere condolences as the Portfolio Committee to the family of Honorable who won't be joining us today. To challenges in the region that she is in, the by-election, right, at the where she is coming from. So she won't be joining us today. Honorable Shabalala will join us, but she is traveling. We may lose her some of the time as she is on transit. Any other apology? I think Lwazi, we have challenges with Lwazi because apparently Lwazi is not coming in. I don't know how are we going to do this. I think on the issues of the hosting rights, let's try to also share the hosting rights with the department so that we don't have a challenge when we are supposed to do that. In terms of the agenda that was sent to all of us in the absence of Lwazi taking us through of flighting the agenda on the screen, after the apologies, I suspect we may have an apology of Honorable Van Staden because he always sends his apology. The Portfolio Committee of Public Works and Infrastructure and the Portfolio Committee of Health that he is also part of, their time slot is the same. So that is why he is always apologizing. So we'll be dealing with the briefing by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure and PMTE on its third and fourth quarter, not only third quarter only, and then after we'll be dealing with the minutes. So on that note, let me hand over to, I don't know who is here in the platform, Minister or Deputy Minister, DG.
Okay, good morning, Honorable Chairperson. I'm joining through my colleague, Maurice's laptop. We're sitting at an habitat that we're not used to today, so our gadgets are not necessarily helping us. We checked with the minister and the deputy minister. They're supposed to be joining shortly. If anything else, we will let you know in due time. But we have, my colleagues are here. Mr. Lwazi Mahlangu will lead the presentation, and I saw he has already been given right to be able to share his presentation, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG. Okay, let's hand over to Mr. Lwazi Mahlangu. We also have our own Lwazi this time. So when we say Mr. Lwazi, Mr. Mahlangu, we're not referring specifically to you. We have our own Lwazi Ben, who is our acting secretary. So over to you, Mr. Mahlangu.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson and members of the committee, and Minister DM in absentia probably will be joining us, as well as to the colleagues from the department. Good morning. Thank you, Chair. I was a bit confused when you kept on saying Lwazi, Lwazi. I was tempted to respond. Chairperson and members of the committee, we are presenting quarter three and quarter four, non-financial and financial. So I'll take you through quickly through the presentation. Chairperson, I'm not sure if you can hear me and members. I'm also in.
We can hear you clearly. Yes.
You. Okay. Right, Chair and committee members. This is the presentation quarter three, quarter four, and this our grid as usual, where we also have demonstrated the color coding to actually show the ratings of the level of performance. I will also still emphasize the gray part, which is an odd quarter. However, when we present the annual at a later stage, we only have two colors. Either we've achieved or not achieved, we won't have any other colors. But for quarterly purposes, we have this differentiation. Chair, members, high-level summary of quarter four presentation, as well as the level of performance per program. What we've done in terms of this is that we have taken each program, looked at the number of KPIs in each program, and then again, looking at that performance grid, we then look at how many KPIs or targets were achieved, and our achievement is 90% and above. So this is a high-level summary of a consolidated KPIs per program and not necessarily individual KPIs. Otherwise, if we were to show the individual KPIs, you will see that some KPIs, we find that they are sitting at 80%, 90%, and 77%, 60-something%. But when you look at in terms of the grading of our performance level, in terms of targets achieved above 90%, we may find that only maybe one is achieved above 90%, but the others are above 80%. So we use that to differentiate between the performance and progress. So progress will be the individual, performance will be the consolidated basket. So this slide shows that the consolidated basket in terms of performance of those indicators. And then as we go into the individual KPIs, we will then demonstrate the extent or the level of performance. Now, Chairperson, you would ask for quarter three and quarter four. As we presented, quarter three, we're sitting at 32% in terms of the number of targets that were achieved above 90%. And then in quarter four, we are sitting at 51%. And then this is the breakdown in terms of that color coding, that out of a total number of 28 indicators in quarter three, we have 38 in quarter four. And what accounts for this difference, it goes back to that gray part where I said some indicators are not measured in a quarter and they will be measured in a particular quarter. So you will see also that in our annual performance plan, we have a lot of our indicators that are being measured at quarter four and then consolidated annually. And then we've also demonstrated in the past that where we do not have a quarter target, we are also able to present to the committee the level of progress, and that will be represented in those grey areas, so that it's not seen that there is no work that is done in that. So that basically accounts for the differences between the 28 number of targets in quarter three and 38 number of targets in quarter four. And this is the level of performance. So you can see that we have some challenges in program one, which I'll explain in detail, which indicators, specific indicators that have contributed to the low level of performance. We also have challenges in terms of our policy branch, where issues also, I will also indicate individually those KPIs, and also CPM, construction project management, as well as real estate management services and the asset register and facilities management. And then I'll go into detail in the next slide. Now, this slide shows program one, where we're talking about that 30%, what accounts for 30%. Chair, we have a number of indicators, and this speaks to our outcome, the outcome of okay, I've been kicked out of the presentation, Chair. Chair, I've been disabled. It has been disabled.
I don't know why that happened. I saw that now, they have given you back.
Oh,
whoever is doing that, no, must not do it. Okay.
Yes, is it showing back? No?
It's back, Lozi.
Back.
Thank you. Yes, so I was on program one. So program one speaks to that outcome of resilient, ethical, and capable DPW. And you can see that the split of our indicators speak some. They speak to the resilience, which is basically under ICT, as well as some of the compliance matters. We also speak of ethical, which way we have a survey that deals with ethical and the compliance rate. And then capability, we're also talking about ICT systems that we have, as well as the capacity, that's human capital, in terms of vacancy, filling the vacancies and ensuring that we have all the relevant
recording in progress
in the department. So those are those indicators that speak to that. Chairperson, in terms of the fraud and corruption perception rate, we were supposed to report on the level of compliance. At the time when we were sending this report to Parliament, we were still consolidating this. Now, this we use it through a system called the JASPAR reporting tool in the department, which basically touches on a number of other systems in the department. At the time of the reporting, presenting this to Parliament, we had not concluded on that reporting because we're still analyzing the data. We still have challenges in terms of capacity, in terms of the expertise in running the JASPAR. There's only one expert in the department to deal with that. But I'm happy to report that we've done the analysis. In terms of the fraud perception rating, we are sitting currently at overall 31.3% level of performance, which is way below the range of 41 and 60. And that is the meaning that we are seeing the lower, we are seeing the level of perception is actually the we are seeing that there's positive perception around some of the areas in the department. So we are aiming at getting over time less than 10% overall in terms of perception. Now, we focused on six key areas. One was to look at the reporting fraud, whether people do report fraud and whether it's accessible systems. We also focus on number two, fraud and corruption awareness, where we do an awareness in the organization, as well as some of the role and stakeholders in the department. We also look at control weaknesses, which will be couched with the compliance rate as well. We look at control weaknesses. And then we have the fourth one, which is the code of conduct. The code of conduct is split into three areas. One, we look at code of conduct in terms of the ethics awareness. That's where we bring in the ethical aspect of it in the organization, which some of the elements are also part of the compliance rate. We also have the individual ethic code of conduct in terms of an individual, and then we also have code of ethics, code of conduct in terms of the workplace, and there are a number of compliance issues that we have to deal with in that. So all of those are then culminated into an average of 31.3% in terms of the compliance, the perception rate. Compliance rate, our target is 100%. We have a 20 compliance. We're looking at all of them reaching levels at least in terms of our rating of compliance. We deem that it is compliant if it's sitting at least 95% and above, but the target is 100%. Now, we are sitting at 88%, so moving from 76% in quarter three, we are sitting at 88% in quarter four. Now, one of the challenges that we are experiencing is largely in the area of, disciplinary cases. Now, there is a rule of thumb that at least cases should be concluded within 90 days. Now, one of the things we're experiencing is that there were continuous changes in terms of the representation, postponements of these cases. Some of them run up until 2 or 3 years, and that then also creates a challenge in meeting that 90-day rule of thumb. And that is one of the areas that has contributed to the lower level of compliance rate. And I think we'll continue to monitor that in terms of getting the expert opinion on cases that drag for too long. How do we then deal with those issues so that at least those issues can also be brought into a reasonable time frame to be dealing with the cases. Then in terms of performance, now this is encompassing all of this. We are sitting at 53% as highlighted earlier here. 53%, in fact it should be 51%, apologies, 51%. We're moving from 32%. Obviously, 32% from quarter three was on the basis of the 28 indicators. Then the 51% is on the basis of the 38 indicators that we're measuring in quarter four. We're experiencing some of the challenges, which I'll explain in the other branches that have contributed to the low level of performance, particularly those that will be shown by EMBA and then shown by RES as well. Financial, we're sitting at 97 in terms of that, but the major challenge that we have has been the issues around the vacant positions, prioritization of vacant positions. There were delays in that, and also the transfer to IDC, 100 million transfer was also delayed by National Treasury to run some of the functions of the organization. So, but in terms of the overall, we are sitting at 97%. That compares to 76% we had in quarter three. So at least when you're looking at overall annually, it should be looking at a better picture of finances. Then we look at the human capital aspect of it, where we're dealing with the vacancy rate as well as disaggregating this in terms of women in SMS level as well as people with disabilities, target of 2%. We're still struggling, we're still having challenges in terms of the persons with disabilities, and one of the challenges is that the nature of the work that is done in public works. And I think it's a two-way thing. One is also from the demand side and also from the supply side. And we find that the job is advertised, but when we receive the applications, you find that you have less of what we would have expected with regards to people with disabilities when it comes to the processing of those. And also in certain areas, we find that the nature of the work is too demanding physically to the point that some of these may not be suitable for that position. But it's an issue that I think that is being addressed in the organization to look at alternative and innovative ways of how you can also encompass this kind of thing. For women in SMS chair and members, we're sitting at 41%, if you will, in quarter four. We're also sitting at 42% in quarter three. So this is something that we've been achieved. In terms of the target itself, we have set ourselves coming from a baseline of about 38%. We have set about 40%. So we've achieved over that. But there is a commitment of going beyond 50% in the organization. There's a commitment to really stretch the commitment and the bar in ensuring that we have all the designated groups participating, as well as empowering women and people with disabilities. So going forward, we'll see those changes and that. And we're working also with the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, where they are also looking at putting up the target of persons with disabilities from 2% to 7%. But we're also looking at that from a department in adjusting to those targets as well, to ensure that we contribute to the government-wide target of 7% as well. Chair, when it comes to resilience, we're looking at the effectiveness of our ICT systems. We started with automation, and we're also looking at digitization. Digitization and processes. Now, we still have challenges in terms of the quantum of these programs, or rather the modules that we have as part of business automation. We still have challenges in terms of internal processes of testing these systems. They have been developed. They are continuously being tested until we are satisfied with the level of all the controls built into the system to ensure that there is then the final rollout of those systems. We have tested the HR system, the SCM system, which has already gone live, as well as the e-leave system. And then now we're also managing the fleet system to ensure that all of these processes are automated and to reduce the paperwork and then improve on the controls and efficiencies within the automation system. The other one is also the SMT, which is also being, which is underway through the business, processes, business case of that, and also the availability of the systems to run the SMT, because it's quite a broad and technical environment. And then when it comes to digitization, this also links to your ERP and enterprise resource plan, which basically looks at the overall organizational systems, putting them together and ensuring that we've got one platform that then can draw all the different systems and ensure that it improves on the management.
I've lost audio. Am I the only one?
On my side, I can still hear Razi.
I can also hear, sir.
Me on my side, Chair.
It's clear on my side, Chairperson.
So I think it may be your device, Honorable Hickley.
Thank you, Chair.
Or maybe this challenge of the network that will definitely experience because of load shedding in Akasha. But now I can hear him clearly, and other members can also hear him clearly. It's only on your side. Can you just maybe get out and then?
I have an inverter. I don't understand why I have a problem, but I will persist. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you so much. Please continue, Razi.
Thank you, Chairperson, and apologies, Honorable Hickley, for that. when it comes to, as I was explaining, the digitization, we're sitting at 24%, Chairperson. You would have seen that in quarter three, it was gray because it was a process, but at least now we're able to say, in terms of the quantum of the modules that are earmarked to be part of this digitization, we're sitting at 24%. And then overall, now I need to explain the two here. When we talk about 24%, one reflects on the quantum of the modules that need to be part of that. So when you talk about 24%, we're talking about two modules and then the percentage of the other module that has been pulled part of, which is 0.4% of that module. So it's two modules that represents that 24% of the 10 overall that we have earmarked for 5-year period. But when it comes to the process and the project implementation of those 2.4 modules, we are sitting at 80% implementation rate of those processes with regards to the project implementation. So that's, I thought I'd differentiate between the quantum of the modules and then each module, what is the level of the implementation rate for each module, which then explains the 80%. Then, Chair, coming to program two, Program two is more about coordination in the environment in the entire sector. So you will see that through intergovernmental relations, particularly ensuring that we adhere to the four principles and objects of the intergovernmental, we sought to then have a developmental of a sector plan, an infrastructure sector plan, where it will also form part and the basis of informing your district development model with regards to the space in which we occupy as public works and infrastructure. So these also form part of your MINMEX, as well as your TENCA MINMEX, as well as to some degree DDM, the DDM model. So we have one sector report that was produced and presented at the MINMEC and technical MINMEC that will then spell out all the critical areas with regards to infrastructure, addressing the skills issues, as well as addressing the entities participating within the environment, as well as engagement with National Treasury on funding, as well as devolution of budget and the challenges that we always experience with regards to the budget infrastructure at provincial level between the department as the implementing agent and the client departments as the holder of the purse, to ensure that we work together in giving effect to proper the delivery of infrastructure. So that's what the sector sector is, and then it's taken to that level of DDM as well. And then we also contribute in terms of beneficiary participating, focusing largely in the built environment, looking at the skills. So this is where we pipeline the demand and supply, where we're looking at drawing from the schools and also from the candidacy program. We also look at also areas within the organization where we can have short-term temporary filling of the gaps in those areas within the department. So they range from the candidacy, the professional, the skills, the learnership, the internships. So these we've achieved them in 1,100 beneficiaries that participated through the skills pipeline in the organization. Program three, which is EPWP, two things critical here. One is that although this represents the report that we then generate from the EPWP reporting system, but within the reports we also have a breakdown of the work opportunities that have been created and then further broken down in terms of the sectors, as well as individual provincial contribution of those work opportunities. Although the figure is not shown here, Chairperson, but I can report that as of quarter four, what we have picked from the report, I think we have about 78% achievement of work opportunities. And but I can provide that figure, a proper figure, I think, as we deliberate. But the report was achieved and provided. Chair, we then go to program four, which is one of the contributing factors to low performance. And one thing I want to express here is that I think one of the challenges with this program is that it's twofold. One is that there's an internal matter or process of ensuring that we provide support when it comes to the development of bills, be it in a government, a public works bill, or the support of the amendments to our entities. Second aspect is also the issue of external stakeholders participating and contributing to this. So it is a stakeholder issue where now there will be some delays emanating from one. A stakeholder may have made an input, but that input will also be taken through the other process of testing the inputs with regards to the bill. That's where we also involve the office, the state law advisors. We also look at the legal aspects of it and then the constitutionality aspect of it on every input that is made. And because of that to and fro between the number of stakeholders, it also has the tendency to then delay the process with this. That is, we experienced it with the public works bill, where inputs were sought internally into the department, because we needed to ensure that there is internal coordination, ensuring that when the bill is passed or is being tested, all the areas within the organization eventually contributed to that. We also experienced that with the CIDP amendment bill. An opinion was expressed by the state law advisors and National Treasury and the Department of Justice. We are processing that information to ensure that we close all the gaps, whether it's constitutionally, legally, or areas that may have unintended consequences once the bill is accepted and then it's passed. We also experienced the same, Chair and Honourable Members, with regards to the development of a bill amendment, the IDA, the Infrastructure Development Act. Though we have a final draft where we've consolidated all the inputs, it was then it was meant to have been submitted to Cabinet, but I think one of the issues was also the change in the Cabinet the decision as well. We also needed to also take this step back to ensure that our principals are also informed of the process and then taken back to Cabinet. So those are some of the areas that we are also working on. The other positive sides around the policy is where we have done the integrated reports, particularly expressing the 52 gazetted strategic integrated SIPs. Those reports are virtually been consolidated and are continuously being presented at the PICC as well as other structures. And then also the phase two of the National Infrastructure Plan 2050, which focuses largely on social and distributed infrastructure, was also submitted to Cabinet for further processing to ensure that it fits into the overall NIP 2050 infrastructure as well as distributed infrastructure at the IDA, and also driving the Infrastructure Development Act. So those are the areas, Chair, with regards to policy. And you can see that out of all is those two that will be achieved. The others, we still have processes and delays within the processes resulting in the low level of performance. Program 5, which is prestige, basically two indicators for quarter 4. There were three in quarter 3, where we achieved at least to be supporting state events with movable structures. 4 were supported in quarter 3, which basically was your mid-term budget statement. We had Spanish visits, the special cabinet, hotline, the special sitting in December 2022. We had supported 5 in the quarter 4, which was SONA, the budget speech, special sitting in National Assembly. And then we also had a state visit, two state visits, the Belgium state as well as Uganda state visit. So we support with those, we support those infrastructure to presidency in that. So we have targeted 2 that we had intended, which basically was the SONA and the budget, but in addition with the special sittings, which were not planned for the Belgium state, and we have also managed to also provide support to that. And then within that process of supporting those, we also need to look at movable assets that are provided with a condition assessment as part of a registered management of that. So with 20% in terms of ensuring that they're in the right condition, so we've also achieved that in ensuring that part of our plans and whatever we support or we provide as support to infrastructure, that infrastructure support is provided with the necessary conditioned assessment register, as well as the wet list that adhere to the project management. Chair, this then relates to now PMTE in terms of the financial level of PMTE. PMTE is sitting at 95% in terms of for quarter 4. Apologies for that, quarter 3 should be quarter 4. And then we moved from 68% expenditure from quarter 3. And also largely, you'll see that from a PMTE side, also there's an issue around vacancies, where there were about 510 vacant funded posts that were not filled. and that also has resulted in the underspending of 144 million. So that also then contributes to that. So I think there is also an HR plan to try and speed up these processes, and I'm sure that you would have seen also in the newspapers some of the positions have already gone out advertising the process of dealing that as part of the HR strategy to fast track some of these vacant positions as well as filling these posts to try and address the issue of vacancy as well as ensuring that we spend on the money that was allocated for compensation of employment. Program 7, which is basically your real estate investment services, we focus largely on providing precinct development plans, which we align to the national strategy, your special plans, and as well as contributing to the smart city principle. So we also trigger a process of availing land, as well as ensuring that we're looking at the precincts, planning precincts for government services in support of smart cities. So we have done one precinct in support of that, which was in Polokwane, which was targeted for quarter four. We had done two coastal concept designs in quarter three, which out of those concepts, one is culminated into a actual developed design, which in this case is Polokwane. So that was target. This was the other one, which is the target that was achieved in quarter two. It's not a quarter three target, it's not a quarter four target, which where we present the custodian asset management plan to National Treasury. It was done and achieved in quarter two. Then we come to construction project management, Chair. We were looking at targets for quarter three and quarter four. We were sitting at 13 out of 85, which is the annual target in quarter three. So which means that cumulatively, if you compare the quantum, the 13 that was achieved in quarter three and adding quarter one and quarter two, in quarter three, we were sitting at 68% against that 85%. Now in quarter four, we're sitting at quantum of 25 projects, design solutions that were completed against the target of 18. One of the issues that we've been expressing in the previous quarters has been the challenge of capacity within the projects or the design areas or within the construction project management. But then that has so since been addressed by looking at the candidates, engineers that were called on to assist the process, and they worked under strict supervision because they are still candidates. So they needed also as an on-the-job training kind of approach, they also fill in the gap of that vacancy or the challenge of capacity within the construction. Hence, we see that there's a huge change in the number of design solutions. Now, with regards to projects completed within agreed period, which also speaks to the within budget, these are more of efficiency indicators to look at the QQT, what we call the QQT, quantity, quality and time aspect of projects, and projects completed within time, within budget, and within the processes. So we're sitting at 12 in quarter three, cumulatively, which was 25 against the 75%, and then we are sitting at 4 in quarter 3, which was a very low percentage, a low figure, which is 28 cumulatively when you look at all the quarters. Now, when you compare that annually, we're sitting at 37% against the 75 number of targets. Projects to be completed within that 3-period time. Still quite a number of issues, Chair and Honourable Members, with regards to the awarding of projects. And I think there are quite a number of delays that we experience, which speaks to controls, the poor performance of the contractors, and that also talks to the overall project management and the roles players and stakeholders and the scoping of those projects to ensure that projects concluded within the time. In terms of the budget, we also experience the same challenges because it's usually the same contractor. So when you have the same contractor who is challenged in terms of completing within the time, they will also have the part of it is that if there's an additional budget scoping or challenges, external vagaries of nature that may affect the project itself, it will have implications on the budget and eventually will have implications in terms of the time to conclude that project. So we experienced the same in quarter three, 14 projects, which was 42 cumulatively, 17 in quarter four out of 125 cumulatively, which basically gives you 59 projects. And quite a number of stoppages by contractors, local contractors. I think we understand the issue of the mafias, slow progress of due to financial cash flows of the contractors themselves. Also, where they're cash stripped, also affects the completion of those projects, as well as requests for extensions to finalize some of the installations within some of these projects, particularly at the courts and offices of some of the clients. So we experienced those delays where they'll request additional funding, and then when there's funding provided, eventually it also goes outside that period of which we had intended to complete that project. So we also have that. And then the handover sites, we also have same challenges, where in quarter four, we had 18 out of 23 that we handed over against the 12 that was achieved in that was performed in quarter three. Again, also, there are two things here. One is internal in terms of the sketch plans, challenges with capacity, as also we're also looking at the bidding process, which is the procurement processes. At various stages of procurement, you find that there will be some toing and froing in terms of that. But in externally, you also have a challenge where now even the client departments of who we are the implementing agent, we also have struggle and have challenges of ensuring of them confirming the scope on time, as well as the budget issues, as we also experience the issues of vetting delays, where we find that we are a suitable candidate or suitable service provider, but they are operating in an environment where they need to be vetted, and therefore the process of vetting also takes quite some time. I think we've also experienced that even from a not only just vetting of companies, also from a from individual perspective in terms of clearance, we also experienced because of the quantum and the demand for vetting from the SSA point of view. So those also contribute in terms of the delays internally. And then overall, when we take all of these in terms of one basket indicator to look at the quantum of projects that are completed, we are sitting at 17 out of 125 in quarter four, 15 out of in quarter three. Cumulatively, we are sitting at 53 overall the whole year, which then gives us about 42%. And again, those challenges that I expressed earlier on in terms of the efficiency indicators are also applicable in this, because now this is just the quantum of those indicators that contribute to those challenges that I expressed earlier on. Chair, we then move also now to the management of the leasing portfolio, which is the real estate management services. Quite a number of indicators that one speak to the empowerment aspect. We're also looking at the security clearance. The security cluster. We're also looking at from that portfolio, how then do we generate savings realize some savings from the renegotiation of those leases, as well as generating some revenue from those. And also in another portfolio is also support to identify properties that can be used for GPV purposes. So this program basically speaks to that, to those areas. So we are looking at the security cluster in terms of a reduction of the leases. We have sitting at 6 in quarter 4, which were processed. You'll see that in quarter 3 it's 2 and it's in gray, which means that they were being processed. And then now it has been processed. We are sitting at 6 against the target of 3 that was achieved within the security class in terms of those leases that have been reduced and accommodated in various areas. Now, out of all of that, we saved about 61.4 million savings as a result of renegotiating teaching some of these lessons within the prescribed national treasury regulations as well as market value. And some of these have actually been accepted by some landlords, which basically when we enter into a contract is also within the regulations, and we are able to then realize this. And that also speaks, you'll see later on, the reduction in the month-to-month leases. I think we're sitting at about reduction from 571 leases that were month-to-month to sitting to about 132 now, which translates to about 77% reduction in those negotiations. And that's why you see that there was this savings that was realized, and it will continue over time. And from that portfolio, we generated 29% in terms of the revenue through the letting out of state-owned. This excludes the harbors. It's just purely the office and some of the facilities that we also are under the custodian of public works. And then we have performing not so good when it comes to vacant state-owned properties that we let out. And this was largely as a result of internally in the department, there are processes that we needed to follow. And those processes now needed to be then institutionalized in the organization, because now we have 11 regional offices, and that needed to be institutionalized. And then as we were testing these guidelines that we developed, we also experienced some glitches in the process, which have now been corrected, and allowing now all the property managers to actually assist in driving this program of vacant state-owned that will be let out. Although we're sitting at 4, but those guidelines have now been strengthened to allow the practitioners to then speed up the process of letting out. GBVF, we had identified 10. I think this is also a value chain, a very important value chain, where we are the custodian, we identify and then we negotiate with the other departments such as your social development for them to be able to house victims of GBV. Suffered from victims of GBV. So we had identified 10 in quarter 4 against 2 in quarter 4. Cumulatively, we have exceeded the target of what we had identified as suitable properties that can be let out for GBV. So that target was achieved as well. Now, the one on the companies within grade A, B, and D, Chair and honorable members, it's a deliberate effort within the organization to target this as part of an empowerment policy of property, where now when you look at these categories A, B, and D, it was achieved because one is the criteria, two is the term, three is also the feasibility, as well as that then enables us to be able to actually realize a higher percentage. So we had 5 out of 5 in quarter 4, 2 out of 3, which was being processed in quarter 3, and we have realized about 100% against the more than 100%, more than 100, I mean the 20% of what we had identified in terms of the quantum, but of all those that participated, 5 of them have actually, we managed to then process them and achieve 100%. Then also that means that also all our leases, new private leases, they come with a maintenance plan. I think we've had quite a number of challenges of the buildings that our clients will then opt out of the building because of the issues of maintenance. So we are correcting that by ensuring that we enter into an agreement that is a maintenance plan to ensure that the clients. So on the one hand, it's about productive assets for the intended purpose, but on the other hand, we are also ensuring that the client needs are met and provided with that outcome we call the dignified client experience, to ensure that they also enjoy the accommodation provided when it comes to them being able to discharge their functional mandate. Chair, in terms of the hectares released, number of hectares released as part of a process to support the land reform, we have about 120, 989.2 hectares that have been identified and released, which talks basically about 110 land parcels measuring that hectareage. Now, there's also issues in terms of, because this one is an engagement between the Department of Rural Development, as well as also engagement with National Treasury and other departments. There's also the toing and froing between the two departments in ensuring that also the land that is available for land reform is also land that can be used, and is because there's vast land, some land cannot be used for that intended purpose. So that also needs to be processed, and to ensure that the request also from the rural development fits in with the type of nature or type of land that is also released for the purpose of land reform. And in terms of managing the asset register, Chair, we support the provinces as part of your one asset register that conforms to all the aspects of a reliable asset register. We support also the provinces. We supported in quarter four Northwest, Gauteng and Eastern Cape in terms of support provided in their asset register. And this also, Chair, as I highlighted earlier on, as part of your intergovernmental plan, national infrastructure plan, as well as your sector plan. This also forms part of those components of the sector plan, where we are also looking at across government, what is our overall asset register. So this also contributes to that aspect as well. And then in terms of immovable assets that are physically verified and confirm ownership, as well as the condition of those assets, we were sitting at 5,173 assets physically verified in quarter four. And then we managed to do 5,687 assets in quarter three. So this is a continuous effort to ensure that all the 23,860 movable assets that were identified for the entire year are verified and to confirm ownership. Although there's still, because it's also a specialized area, that's number one. Number two, because of the assets that are when you talk of geographical location in vast areas, located in different areas, we're also looking at systems of collecting data and the required expertise to collect data on site that will be fed into the system. So you still need capacity as well as certain systems that are needed. And in other areas where you find that is also an area where the mountainous area stuff, to actually get there, I think an example is like Northern Cape, where you find that it's quite a distance from the regional office in Kimberley to other places. So we're still also looking at improving some of those issues of turnaround, as well as ensuring that the necessary skill that is able to actually go and collect data on that, on those issues. And then the last one, Chair, which is the facilities management, which fits directly to that issue of dignified client experience, as well as productive asset outcomes of the department, is to ensure that we also do condition assessment on those properties that we have identified. We had identified 220 for the year. 33 was assessed in quarter three, and 36 was assessed in quarter four against a target of 75, which was also not doing very well when it comes to that. One of the challenges, obviously, is the issue of capacity, and by capacity is basically a very specialized environment of technical skills that will be required, particularly within the maintenance aspect of it, as well as ensuring that those skills are, so one is you are going to the market, but at the same time you find that what we can offer as a department in terms of the rate at which is charged for that skill outside, we also find that some have skeptical in terms of taking on this. So it's an issue that is also being addressed in the department of how do we match the industry and also the requirements of the department, and still work within the prescripts of the department as well as government as a whole. And then also out of those properties, we're also looking at critical components that are assessed, like HVAC, heating, ventilation, air cons, as well as generation, genset and water systems. So we're also looking at that, which we're also not doing very well for the same reasons of the multidisciplinary technical skills that are required whether it's a skill of an individual or is a skill in terms of the different companies that can actually provide this. And I think you would recall, Chair, that some of them will also go the route of OEMs, original equipment manufacturers, as a way of mitigating that risk of other service providers that may not have the necessary skill to actually to conduct these critical or these assessments. And then lastly would be the balance between our preventative maintenance and reactive maintenance. And I think we're trying to be proactive in ensuring that we proactively respond to continuously respond to matters of maintenance without having to wait for the facility to really collapse, and then we then react to that. So there's a continuous through term contracts that are in place to actually respond to those demands of the needs. So that there's a process, Chair and members, in that. And I think in some areas we've also created a feedback loop from the clients where we have had positive feedback in some of the areas where we have actually responded faster and also repaired and maintained some of those assets, and they continue to work. So it's a process that is also engaged in the department. So overall, Chair and members, that's the non-financial. I think the next part is then the main vote, Chair, to CFO. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mahlangu. Good morning, Chairperson and members, DM and colleagues. If you move, Lwazi, I'll be presenting the main vote. Then Juanita will present the PMTE. Lwazi, can you move to the next slide? Thank you. Chair and members, the financial performance is for quota 3 and the fourth quota, but I must highlight that quota 4 is not yet audited. It may change, which means then we'll have the final figures after the final audit. When it comes to administration, which is program 1, we had a budget of 555 million, and in quota, the third quarter, we spent 355 million, and in the fourth quarter, cumulatively, we spent 501 million with the 90% spending, whereas in quarter 3, it was 64%, so it has improved. Then program 2, which is intergovernmental coordination, we had a budget of 59 million and the spending for quota 3 was 36 million, quota 4, 47 million, with the 59% spending for quota 3 and quota 4, 80% was also an improvement. And expanded public works program, the budget is 3 billion. The spending for quota 3 was 2 billion. And quota 4, 2.9 billion. If you round it off, up with 3 billion basically. The understanding is 37 million. If you compare with the final budget, then in terms of percentages, as they are indicated, but for quota 4, we were sitting at 99%. Similarly, with the next programs, the spending for third quarter was 84%. I won't go into too much details, but the third quarter was 84%. And the quota 4 was 97%. Then the last one, which is our prestige unit, the budget was 67 million and the spending was 35 million for that quota, fourth quota 49 million, and the percentages are there. I must indicate, Chair, for prestige, why there is a lower spending. It's because of the state events that were not. We didn't take a lot of state events. There were not as many as they were planned when we started to finalize the budget. So the overall change in terms of the final appropriation, we were having 8.2 billion and the spending for the third quarter was 6.2 billion, whereas in quarter four was 7.9 billion, which is a 97% in terms of the fourth quarter. which then it's a good percentage in terms of spending. If you can move, Dwazi. Thank you. So this is a trend that shows how we've been spending from quarter one to the fourth quarter. I'm not going to details. You can see, Chair, how Prestige started, because that's the area where we have not spent more than 80%. It's sitting at 73. So you can see the trend in quarter one, it was 10%, quarter two, 26, and third quarter, 52, then it's sitting at 73%. Other areas, I think we've been doing well, even though in some areas we didn't start well, but we have improved. You can move, Elwazu. Thank you. Then in terms of economic classification, in terms of the overall total budget, it's still the same as what I've presented, so I'm not going into details. I'll just highlight a few areas. On compensation of employees, Chair, as we closed the year, we were sitting at 86% for the fourth quarter, whereas in third quarter it was 64%. So overall, the underspending for compensation of employees was 82 million. It's as a result of the filling of positions. I think we've been reporting that in the past quarters. The main reason for that, Chair, some positions, as we fill them, we promote people internally. In some instances, there are delays in recruitment process. As a result, we have that 82 million, which was not spent. And for goods and services, the spending has improved if you compare to the third quarter of 54%, where we spent 257 million. I think there is an error there, Chair, because the fourth quarter also says 267 million. I don't know if you can check the actual one. It's 429 that was spent. Sorry, Chair, for that error. So the total percentage is 89% in terms of spending. Then for transfers and subsidies, we had a budget of 7 billion. For third quarter, we've spent 5.5 billion, and in the fourth quarter, 6.9 billion, which if you look at the variance or underspending, it's 100 million. For third quarter, in terms of the percentage, was 79, and it has then improved to 99%. I must indicate, Chair, the reason why we have that 100 million is because of the 100 million that was appropriated to ESA after, I think it was around November, where we got that approval from National Treasury. But there were certain conditions that Treasury put where they requested a report when the program of ESA was managed through EDC, Economic Development Department. So we had to get all those reports because Treasury wanted us to account. So it was not easy to get that information from the previous department that was responsible. And Treasury only gave us a green light in February 2023 to say we can now spend the money, and it was too late to spend 100 million. However, we have requested a rollover because these 100 million affect the project preparation for ESA. Then other areas is provinces and municipalities of 1.6 billion, where we spend 100%, but I must indicate in the third quarter it was 79% spending, but fourth quarter 100%. And all other areas except public cooperation and private enterprise, which I've already explained, where the spending was sitting is sitting at 62% in the fourth quarter, whereas in the third quarter was 46%. I've already explained the 100 million. Then the total for the spending, as I said, it's still the same in terms of the total. So the overall spending also per economic classification is sitting for the third quarter, 76%, and the fourth quarter is 97%, which I think is a good performance for the main vote. Luaz, if you can move. This is a trend also per economic classification. I'm not going to go into details with it. All what I can highlight, it's machinery and equipment where we are sitting at 53%. This is linked, Chair, to purchase of equipment. So when you have officials that are not appointed, so you only procure laptops at a time when you know that recruitment is moving, is similarly with the furniture. So as a result of that, then we are sitting at 53%, but it's not a big budget, Chairperson. It's just a small budget of 19 million. So the underspending was 8.9 million out of 8.1 billion, the total budget of the department. So it's not a significant budget. If you can move, Lwazi. I've already covered, Lwazi, the narrative. You can move. Yeah, so this is a detailed report for transfers and subsidies. I'm not going to details share with all the entities where we have spent 100%. I can just highlight few significant amounts for property trade entity management, which is our PMTE. There is a budget of 3.9 billion and we spent the whole amount, which is sitting at 100%. The area that I chair is concern is the one that I've already discussed, the infrastructure development coordination, which is mainly ESA, that 100 million chair, which was not spent. So we are sitting at 47% in terms of the spending. So for transfers and subsidies, Chair, all other areas, it's sitting at 100% in terms of the spending. So overall, we are sitting at 99% where we spent 6.9 billion as at end of March against the budget of 7 billion. If you can move, Lwazi, to the next slide. Let me, Chair, hand over to Juanita Prinsloo to take us through the PMTE. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee, DM, and other senior managers. This is an overview, a high-level executive overview of the PMT situation as at the end of March 2023. And as with DPW, this has not been audited. This is our preliminary report. In terms of receipts, we have improved from the third quarter from 11.5 billion to 16.1 billion rand. This is an improvement from 67 to 96%. When we go to the details, you'll see that the significant increase was with state-owned accommodation charges, which picked up in the fourth quarter. Our current and transfer expenditure improved from 9.9 billion in the third quarter to just over 13.4 billion in the fourth quarter. This is an improvement from 73% to 99%. We had a surplus of 2.7 billion in the fourth quarter, and then from operating activities, and then we spent 2.5 billion rand on investment activities, which gave us a cash balance on budgeted items of near 170 million rand. What is to be noted is that in the fourth quarter, we had to significantly reduce our revenue projections due to the cycle five itemized billing rates that was approved by National Treasury. I will show you the detail in the coming slides, but we had a reduction of more than 800 million rand in accommodation charges. Lwazi, if we can move to the next slide. Year of interest, as I said already, that there was a reduction of 813 million because of the accommodation charges. The net effect of this was 809 million on accommodation charges. The major contributor to this was DCS, Department of Correctional Services. Their baseline was reduced by 636 million rand. So the entity has invoiced 16 billion rand of its budget at 16.9 billion rand revenue as at the end of March. This is equivalent to 95% of the total budgeted revenue. Our actual receipts in relation to 2022-23 invoices amounted to 15 billion, which is a 93% recovery rate. I also have to note then that the receipts that we show in our revenue slides includes, in some cases, prior year revenue that we only recover in this financial year. If we add the municipal services to this, we only recovered 66% of the invoices that was issued on municipal services, but the recovery on accommodation charges, as I mentioned already, did improve during March. The total expenditure for the period was 16 billion rand, which represents 95% of the reduced budget. This is just below our target of 100% that we have in the APP that was is already reported on, but it is a huge improvement in terms of, in comparison with previous financial years. The major reason for our underspending, we'll go into the details now, is mostly client capital, as we could only spend 64% of the allocated budget. the net position for the PMTE, we had a positive cash flow, as already indicated, of 170 million rand. But if we add municipal services to this, we had a negative cash flow of 672 million rand for the period. We also have to take into consideration that we have a bank overdraft of 1.4 billion rand as at the end of March due to the clients not paying their debt. Lozi? Thank you. This is more detail on the revenue itself. As I've already indicated, that we have received 94% of our exchange transactions. That is where we claim back from clients, and we received 100% of the augmentation, which we received from DPW through the transfer. It can be noted then that accommodation charges state-owned was reduced by 809 million rand from our original E&E budget. And as I've explained already, this is due to the rates that was approved by National Treasury in February 2023. We did recover 5.2 billion of the five, and that's not just of the 5 billion, as already indicated, that 5.2 billion that is in relation to invoices issued this year, as well as invoices issued in prior years, where our debt section is constantly recovering money from the clients. So we actually, in terms of budget, managed to collect 103% of what we budgeted. Other bigger budget is the private leases, has increased from 3.6 billion in the third quarter to 5 billion in the fourth quarter. Lozi, we can move. Thank you. If we look at the expenditure on a more detailed level, as already indicated, for current and transfer payments, we spent 99% of the budget. Because of the budget cut that we received in February, we had to cut some of our expenditure items. And then in the process of cutting those budgets, we also had to implement some budget movements for optimal expenditure to make sure that we move money where it's more necessary and where it can spend. So overall, of the 16.8 billion rand budget, we managed to spend in the fourth quarter 15.9 billion. In the third quarter, we were on 11.8 billion, and this is 95% of the total budget. If we look at the current payments, where we spend 99% of our budget, the reason for underspending there was compensation of employees, where we only managed to spend 2 billion rand of our 2.1 billion rand budget, which is 93%. And I think the CFO has already explained the challenges with compensation. And linked to compensation is your goods and services. We spent 97% of the money there, but we did not manage to spend everything. Of note, maybe it's machinery and equipment. Although there is a smaller budget, we actually moved money there because there is some equipment that we've been that's been overdue for a while that we managed to order and receive in this financial year. As already also the other one that's not 100%, DPW capital infrastructure, we managed to spend 98% of the 597 million rand budget. Biggest challenge at this stage is client capital. Of the 2 billion rand budget at the end of the financial year, we managed to spend 1.3 billion rand, and that is only 64% of the overall budget. We can move. I think we can move past the narrative. This is also just showing the trend over the financial year. You can see in most of the cases we've been, this is revenue, we've been receiving it at a constant trend, except for accommodation charges. We were at 50% in the third quarter, and we managed to move it towards 100% in the fourth quarter. We can look at the expenditure. The next slide. Here also gives an indication of where we have been spending the budget. The significant improvement was repair, but that is also honestly not an improvement. It is because of the budget cut that it, the percentage improved so significantly. One that did improve significantly was the machinery and equipment. And here it is also very obvious that the client capital is the lowest spending item. Who was it? Thank you. This is just the budget adjustments to show that in the beginning of the year, we had 18.4 billion rand. We have reported some of the movements to the committee through the year in the different quarterly reports, but because we failed to bring it again because of the significant reduction that happened in the fourth quarter. So overall, our budget reduced by 1.5 billion. This is because of the accommodation charges, mostly that reduced by 809 million. Client projects reduced by, this is where we are dependent. This is a recoverable budget where we agree on, with clients on the projects that we will execute for them and the cash flows needed. That budget reduced by 481 million and the leasing budget increased. These two budgets, that's colored, is, as I said, recoverable budget. So the revenue is linked closely to the expenditure. The augmentation was reduced by 540 million. That was reported earlier in the year already. Thank you, Lawrence. The debtors age analysis, if we can look at quarter three, we have actually improved from quarter three to quarter four. Quarter three, we had an outstanding debt of 10.9 billion rand. If we can move to quarter four, the next slide. You will see that our debtors has decreased from quarter three to quarter four to 9.5 billion rand. The majority of the outstanding debt is still in the previous financial years, although that is improved slightly from the third to the fourth quarter. 77% of our outstanding debt is still in the previous financial year. And then 23% as of March, 23% or 2.2 billion rand of the outstanding debt related to the current financial year. Our biggest item on outstanding debt is municipal services. We can see the total outstanding amount is 6.1 billion, of which 4.6 billion relates to the prior years. But even in this year, of the 2.2 billion, more than 50% relates to municipal services, which is 1.5 billion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Peterson. We hand it over back to you.
Thank you, Acting DJ and your team for this presentation. I won't show my video. There are indications that my network is not stable on my side. In fact, as you were presenting, I lost you in some of the presentations. I will then invite honorable members to comment and engage on this presentation. Honorable Siwisa, you will be the first one, followed by Honorable Hicklin, and then followed by Honorable Van Skalvik. In that order, honorable members, Honorable Siwisa, Honorable Hicklin, and Honorable Van Skalvik, the last one will be Honorable Mashele.
Thank you,
Honorable Tring. Honorable Tring after Honorable Mashele. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you again. Good morning, everyone. Chair, I have a few comments. This is the longest comment I'm ever going to make in the committee. But let me start by saying, Chair, I'm looking at this fourth quarter report, and I think when you started, you said we'll be given third and fourth quarter report, but now I only saw that it's only the fourth one that has been presented. Now, Chair, when you look at this report, we hear things that we've been hearing for the past so many months. It's still the same thing. We still have a delay in cases being completed. I think by this time, the department should have been at a stage whereby they know how to deal with these cases that are not finished, which are causing some problems in the department. What are the reasons for the delay, and how will what intervention will be made to make sure that these cases, taking into consideration that the presenter said they have to comply to say the cases must be finished within 90 days, and it's going for years. There are certain cases that we know are still sitting with the Department of Public Works, and those cases have not been resolved. In the active cases, are there any officials that are still active within the department? That's my second question. Service delivery is of paramount importance, and unfilled senior positions are hindering the service delivery issue. So there won't be any service delivery issue, irrespective of the money that is going to be spent. What are the reasons that even today we are still being told that there are positions that have even been filled in? And then you look at the money that is being spent, and then but still we have vacant positions that are there. What are the reasons for decrease in funds allocation for program 3 and 5? There's a decrease in allocation in the adjustment, especially 3, that speaks about EPWP, and they mentioned the EPWP infrastructure projects. Which provinces have been affected by this budget cut? Since there are fewer state functions that are happening, I think it's about time that the department tells us, because at some point they said the reason why they are being overcharged or they find contractors overcharging them is because of they don't have their own equipment, so they are relying on contractors or whoever is getting the tender to deal with a state function to bill them a certain amount. And they said they are rolling out the program whereby they are going to equip their own equipment. They are going to acquire their own equipment to cut on the budget. How far is the process of acquiring whatever that they are going to need for a state function? Pertaining to bursaries, how many employees are beneficiaries of bursaries that have been given by the Department of Public Works, and how many of them are still active within the department? Because we can't give out bursaries and then people are going to leave the department at a later stage. And then what criteria is going to be used for beneficiaries as to say this person is the one? Because even yesterday, the minister was speaking about they are going to avail bursaries especially for the industry of construction. So what kind of criteria is going to be made to identify beneficiaries? Chair, in one of the sittings, and it's a pity that this thing comes up in this report now, and the former minister is not here. I asked her, is load shedding going to have a negative impact on service delivery? Today we see that it says that load shedding had a negative impact on service delivery, the power cuts and everything that needs to happen. And now I knew why I asked that question in Parliament, because I knew that load shedding is affecting everyone, even business. If it's affecting small businesses, then you should ask yourself, how is it going to affect departments? And I was told that load shedding is not going to affect any service delivery issues. We are still hearing about COVID. We are in 2023, and we are still being told that COVID is the main reason for slow service delivery and for unfilling of posts. And we are going to be told about COVID, even though we've forgotten even that there's ever been COVID in South Africa. The construction project management, the target was 125, only 42 have been completed. And then only 43 have been completed, but there were deviations that were supposed to be made. Can you get specifications again, say, where are these projects so that you must go and see? Because there was once an incident, Chair, I don't know if you remember, of an MEC passing somewhere Eastern Cape, and then it decided to make a detour to go and see the school that she was told that it has been completed, only to find that it's an empty ground. There was never a project that was ever completed. So can you get the sites where they are saying that these projects have been completed? And then the 100 unutilized vacant properties, where are they? Can we also get a list of those? And then the sites that are going to be handed, that have been handed over for construction, can we also, I think all of these things will have to be written down and be sent to us, because we won't be able to remember all of this information. So if all these questions can be sent in written form, especially of the projects that have been completed and of the sites that have been handed over and of the 100 unutilized vacant state-owned properties, if that can be given in written form, Chair, I'll be happy. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Suwisa. Honorable Hickley.
Thank you so much, Chair. I'm keeping my video off in the interest of bandwidth. Chair, like Honorable Suwisa, I'm concerned of anomalies within the EPWP program, and especially the non-filling of senior vacancies within all programs across this DPWI. Without the filling of senior vacancies, we are going to continue to have a DPWI that does not achieve its APPs and KPIs. It's not going to happen. And the DPWP program will become an absolute disaster if we don't have the appropriate monitoring and evaluation and upskilling of managers within the program itself, because the EPWP underspent on admin fees and agency support and outsourcing of services to regulating authorities who have to manage the EPWP program, specifically in the non-state sector program. This is supposed to be managed by the IDT, but there are delays in the appointment of service providers for EPWP infrastructure programs. How many times do we have to raise this problem before it actually gets addressed? It's all fine and well to say that you don't manage to reach your KPIs in the third quarter, but you manage to do it in the fourth quarter. What happens to those people who worked within the third quarter and now are not paid within the third quarter, and you have what is tantamount to fiscal dumping in the fourth quarter in order to meet your obligations? It really becomes a problem when EPWP programs really are meant to assist the poorest of the poor, and yet the people managing the programs are not upskilled enough and sufficiently well to actually meet the obligations of the workers they are meant to support. We've discussed this ad nauseum and ad infinitum, and it has to be dealt with now because it's becoming a serious problem within the EPWP environment. I'm going to move on to the reporting of fraud within the department. I don't know how seriously people are really taking the reporting of fraud within the DPWI. Even Parliament itself does not trust the DPWI to actually rebuild Parliament itself. And that was borne out by the money allocation for the rebuild of Parliament to DBSA and not to the IDT. There is a trust deficit within the DPWI from within Parliament itself. Parliament itself does not believe that The DPWI is free of corruption. Corruption within this department really needs to be dealt with at the highest level, whether it's looking at codes of conduct, whether it's looking at the reporting of fraud, whether it's looking at the perpetuation of fraud, whether it's looking at supply chain management. Fraud investigation, whether it's sitting at 31.3%, whether it's sitting at 30%, whether it's looking at 60%. Fraud eradication in DPWI has to be at 100% or the KPI is meaningless. Looking at slide policy and research, slide 8 on the presentation by the department. The public works bill is still waiting for stakeholder input, which has not been submitted to the minister. The CIDB Amendments and Infrastructure Act has not been received for amendments. IDA has not been submitted to cabinet. These are major problems. Yesterday in the House, the minister looked me in the eye and said to me, "This will be done this year. Talk is cheap. Money buys whiskey. Let's get on with the whiskey." The real estate management and the real estate investment services. We have to look at the land precinct for the smart cities that everybody thinks is fantastic. There are only two concept designs. If you want this to become a reality, this has to be done with far more speed. Within project managements themselves, what is being done again to upskill those people within project managements to be able to manage projects correctly? We cannot forever rely on consultants. You talk about quality, quantity and time. Only 37% out of the 75 were actually realized. That is because the people who are responsible for managing these projects are not upskilled correctly. When is the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure going to upskill their own people to do this effectively and efficiently? Are UAMPS and CAMPS actually part of the day-to-day running of this department as mandated by Guillaume? I'm looking at this and I'm saying, no, it's not. Because if UAMPS and CAMPS were done, project management and real estate management wouldn't have the problems that we are sitting with at the moment. There is still too much of an emphasis on private leasing. Yes, we are making tremendous savings. 61.4 million rand is a great saving on private leasings, and that's a step in the right direction. But there is still a letting out of buildings in state that are not state-owned because there is not a sufficient emphasis being placed on repairs and maintenance of state-owned property. We are still appear to be reactive maintenance as opposed to proactive maintenance. On slide 17, there was talk about utilized vacant stands and utilized state-owned properties being made available for GBF sites. There were only 10 sites that were allocated. I can tell you of at least two sites that I have made application to the Department of Public Works for repeatedly over the last 2 years to be allocated for GBVF shelters in Swanee. I have twice been told they have been given to the Department of Social Development, and twice the Department of Social Development have told me they know nothing about this. If the DPWI is serious about addressing GBVF, they would do more than allocate only 10 properties. 10 land parcels, insufficient for the needs of the GBVF scourge that is 100% holding this country by the throat. You're saying that in the IAR has been implemented in Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, Northwest, Gauteng, and the Eastern Cape. That is fantastic. Please, can we have a proper IAR register so that we know exactly what physical inspections have been done in those areas? Because we have land parcels, we have buildings that have not been looked at, and it still poses a major problem for us. I'm pleased to see that the PMTE seems to be standing more on its feet, and it seems to be addressing the invoicing problem. What I still cannot get my head around is the fact that municipal services are not being paid for by clients who are serviced by the PMTE. I cannot understand how the collection of municipal bills is still not being done by the PMTE. I need more explanations on this because it just does not make sense to me. Repairs are still not being done proactively, and they are reactive, and I will leave it there. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Hicklin. Honourable Van Schalvik.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to the Chairperson members. I see DM is also on the platform. The departmental officials led by the acting DG and everyone on that morning out. I just wanted to greet, so I'll pause my video for now. Chairperson, I would like to welcome the presentations that has been made. And although I share many of the sentiments raised by the previous members, I'm not going to repeat it to not to waste time. So, Chair, I'm just going to zoom into the issues that has not been raised, like the issue in terms of the disciplinary cases, which are really slowly being dealt with. And as it's been reported, some of them last up to 3 years, which is a great point of concern. So my question in this regard would be, Chairperson, does the department have a well-capacitated legal department to effectively deal with these disciplinary cases? And what are they doing to speedily reduce the lengthy delays of the cases? And why do they need to speed up this process and to effectively deal with these cases? Because my concern in this regard, Chairperson, would be that irrespective of if the person would be fined guilty or not guilty, we have a warm body that's not in office, that's not performing the duties, that's not assisting in terms of service delivery, but there's expenditure attached to this body. And where is, as someone else could have been appointed in that position, or that person could have been in office performing their duties. So that's my point of concern in that regard. Then, Chairperson, I want to commend the department in terms of the target that has been achieved in terms of the employment of designated groups, as this was continuously a point of concern to me, even though they also reported that they are struggling to employ disabled people, but I welcome also the initiative in engaging with the department, the different departments, as well as the Department of Women and Persons with Disability to try and remedy the situation. My point, Chairperson, without venturing largely into this issue in terms of the under expenditure on compensation of employees across the programs and the 11% target that has been reached, it's it's still a point of concern to me, Chairperson, that we are talking about a certain number of positions that's vacant, and we can't sit with that a recurring factor whilst we have the current conjuncture of our economic climate and having an increased unemployment rate. So we really need to deal with the issue of appointment of vacant funded posts, but also in terms of the senior management people that are on in acting positions. We really need to see a shift in that regard. The delay of the disbursement of funds to the IDC chairperson to the value of 115.5 million rand due to the delay in fulfilling of preconditions. I want to know, has that issue's been resolved and what plans are in place to prevent the scenario from recurring? Because this is a threat again to the existence of the IDC, and we really don't need such pressure on this entity. I also want to join the previous speakers in the identification of the challenges in terms of the public works bill and CIDB bills delays, and I want to know what are the new timelines in terms of seeing the light of day of this legislation. Can that be shared with us? In terms of the under expenditure on payments of management fees under EPWP is a point of concern to me. And I want to know, if any, what are the impact in terms of the EPWP projects if we look at this challenge? Chairperson, I also want to know what are the plans that are in place to remedy the impact of load shedding. And before I raise my last point, Chairperson, I see the concern, and I have a concern in terms of the huge overdraft that the department is having due to the clients not paying. And we look at the debtors' age analysis that decreased, but it's still not sufficient in terms of addressing the liquidity of the department. So I know that Minister De Lille indicated to us that she sent letters and she'll be having engagements with the different ministers of the client departments, especially those who's really faltering on this issue of debt management. So I want to know what are the fruits that we saw in terms of remedying the situation through the efforts, and if DM can indicate to us what is the plans, what are the plans that are in place now to ensure that this debtors' age analysis are being addressed effectively. Lastly, Chairperson, we've continuously spoken about this reactive and proactive maintenance that hasn't been done, or proactive maintenance that hasn't been done over the past 4 years. And we've really been harsh to the department in terms of addressing that thing. And it's still a point of concern because it's still being raised. But however, Chairperson, I think it's just fair on the department, and specifically the prestige side, in terms when we look at the proactive maintenance, I can safely say that I have personal experience, Chairperson. A few weeks back, my house in Acacia Park was visited, and the reason for the visit is to establish what maintenance needs are there in the house. And it's a great achievement because I see there's really efforts being made to try and address this. Apart from that, Chairperson, it was not only a needs analysis visit, but a day after that, they actually came and did the minor things that they could have done. And they indicated that there are some major things that needs to be done, and they're going to process it on the later stadium. So that is a really good site, Chairperson, and it's showing us that we are not only talking, but it's there's something that's rubbing off, and we want to commend the department for that thing, and we want to urge them also to move quicker on that issue, because we know it's not only maintenance issues, Chairperson, but you are still staying in a prefab house. And it's been 4 years since you've moved in, and there's no effort in terms of eradicating the prefab houses, and that's a point of concern. So we really need the department to finally move on that issue as well. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. Honourable Mashele, I'm not sure whether he's still in the meeting. Honourable Mashele.
Thanks, Chair. I'm still in the meeting, however, I'm covered. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mashele. Just before I hand over to the department, welcome DM.
Chair, I'm not sure if you forgot me, Chair.
Oh, apologies. Honorable Shrink, over to you. I no longer see your head. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm also going to leave my video off just because of the bandwidth challenges. But Chair, my first question is with regards to the effect of vacancies. I think our previous colleague, Honourable Siwisa, mentioned what is the effect of load shedding on service delivery, but in addition to that, and obviously I think it's a key question, but in addition to that, one also has to ask whether there's been any thought given to the effect of the vacancies that have not been filled on service delivery. So Chair, that would be the first question, the effect of the vacancies on service delivery. Secondly, there's been huge amounts of underspending amounting to millions of rand in the different programs. And I've said previously, Chair, and I'll repeat it for as often as I'm on the committee, that it's inexcusable. And I understand that, you know, it may be that for some of the different entities that they are not meeting the requirements, and so the transfers can't take place, resulting in underspending. But these are administrative things that must be sorted out, because the underspending to a large extent is inexcusable in the light of the high unemployment that we have and the complaints that we receive, numerous complaints on poor service delivery, particularly in our department when it comes to, you know, repairs and maintenance of buildings, as well as the combating of fraud. So Chair, I think that some of my colleagues have also mentioned the challenge of underspending, and this must be addressed. And then again, my last question would be with regards to the state of the overdraft that we have. This can be compared also, Chair, to the debt that we currently have on our national account. And when one looks at the servicing of that debt on our national account, it's beginning to crowd out some of the other key budget items, education, health, and so on. So when you have debt that continues to be there as a liability or as a line item that needs to be serviced, it crowds out other key and important aspects in terms of service delivery and the mandate that this particular department has. So what is the plan? What is the plan to eliminate that overdraft? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tring. Sincere apologies for overlooking you. I will continue without the video due to the challenges that we have. One is a comment before asking a question. Not necessarily dealing with what Honorable Van Schalkwyk has said, but I just want to raise this. We are towards the end of the sixth term, and just before we went for COVID lockdown in March 2020, we had a meeting in Good Hope in which the department told us that they're going to deal with the prefabs that had the asbestos roof in Acacia and all that. We continue seeing refurbishment, maintenance on brick houses. Nothing is done on this. I want to raise, because the minister yesterday mentioned that they are going to deal with asbestos. You are having a village here that has asbestos roof, something that we have said several times, but not a single maintenance that has been done in the houses that have challenges in the form of being prefabbed, being having asbestos roof, and I don't know how many years these units were done. I hope that moving forward, you will take that into consideration. I just wanted to raise that because it's something that we are no longer saying now, but you need to know that as much as we are not saying it, it's something that we see that you are dealing with the houses, brick houses, that already has a structure that is firm and sound, but these houses that are so bad, you're not dealing with them. Okay, my question, you indicated that you had the money that was allocated towards bursaries for non-employees, infrastructure related studies. I just want to get a clarification on this. What exactly do you mean? Did you provide bursaries for those that wanted to study, or exactly what does it necessarily mean on this one? Otherwise, in terms of all other questions, my colleague covered me. Thank you so much. DG and your team.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members, for all the comments and questions. I have a full complement of my colleagues here that will assist me in answering the questions, starting with Honourable Siwisa. I think from Honourable Siwisa, she had just requested various lists of that she would like us to respond in writing, the completed projects and the sites that have been handed over, the list of the 100 vacant sites, and she also wanted to understand the bursaries. I think that is the question that you have asked also, Chairperson, to deal with how many beneficiaries we have and how many are still in the department and what criteria is used then to award the bursaries. The bursaries that we're talking about for non-employees, these are matriculants that we offer bursaries on an annual basis. We will submit the list as requested by Honorable Siwisa. And then on the EPWP program, I have my colleague, Ms. Abrahams, that is going to deal with those questions. And I also have my colleague, Sis Nana Mhlongo, who will deal with the Public Works Bill and the CIDB Bill timelines as requested by Honorable Hicklin. There was an issue of construction project management that was raised on the upskilling of our construction project management. As far as I understand, Chairperson, our project managers are on OSD meaning they are required to have some a registration with the council for project managers. But Mr. Mukotu will explain further on that matter. Honorable Hicklin also raised the issue of maintenance. The issue of maintenance, I think yesterday also took us center stage in the budget speech. There is still a great deal of reactive maintenance that is done within the department. That is how we deal with our emergencies. But the department is now implementing term contracts for the smaller facilities, where we appoint contractors to be on our panel and they do routine maintenance or time-based maintenance on our facilities for the various components like your lifts and HVAC equipment and fire equipment as well, and basic plumbing stuff. And then there's for bigger facilities, we are implementing the total facilities management for the bigger facilities, which is more where we have a bigger company that then is based on site and they manage. Where we have implemented total facilities management, examples were given yesterday as well. It is one military hospital. It is Batubili building where we have the Department of Public Services and administration. And it was also Civitas building where we used to have the Department of Health where they are out. The results, they are actually quite impressive. So we are looking to roll out further the total facilities management. Honorable Hicklin also raised the issue of the GBVF facilities. I agree, Honorable Hicklin, that we need more than 10 properties. In fact, the initial list of properties that we had identified was over 80 properties. However, in our engagement with the Department of Social Development, some properties were deemed not suitable, and that list went down to, I think, 26 at last count, which they have accepted. Okimori's just corrected me. We are now standing at 35 properties that have been finalized. So what then happens after identifying and we agree, we do send our team of facilities management team to go and do refurbishment of the houses. And then we sign a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Social Development in the various provinces for them to take over the properties. So the 10 is largely dependent on the finalization of the back and forth between ourselves and the user department, which will be the Department of Social Development in this case. So the 10 is basically based on that process, but we as and when we get a request, it's not something that we will stop doing. The issue of delays delays in the finalization of cases, I think it was raised by both Honorable Van Schalkwyk and Honorable Siwisa. I do have my colleagues from corporate services who will assist with the response to that matter. But my understanding is that where we do experience such delays, it's not necessarily where the department fails to start the processes. We do start the processes, but then the actual back and forth between the cases or at least the people with whom these cases are dealt with, there will be those delays. We do have cases that are lasting for 4 years, but not because the department was not instituting the disciplinary hearings, but because of the back and forth or the complications within the various cases do take some time. But my colleagues will give more detail. Honorable Van Schalkwyk also asked about the impact of load shedding, and I think also Honorable Hicklin. The department does have a program, both short-term and long-term, in terms of how are we going to deal with the impact of load shedding. The longer-term project is the one that the minister announced yesterday in the budget speech, which is the Integrated Renewable Energy and Resource Efficiency Program. It's part of the ESA program. That is the bigger and the longer-term plan where we want our buildings, or at least government buildings, to be self-sufficient in terms of energy. And then the shorter term is the issue of generators. What we have found with my colleagues at Facilities Management and Construction Project Management is that we do have a lot of generator projects that are embedded within bigger projects that the CPM program would have. So what we're trying to do now is to isolate the generators and make them a specific program that will then be easier to implement with the manufacturers, and then they'll be able to maintain such generators. But these are aimed at smaller facilities, which the IRREP ideally would not work for such facilities. Therefore, generators become our better bet. I think, let me pause here, Chairperson, also the CFO, or maybe Ms. Prinsloo will deal with the issue of the overdraft, the impact of the overdraft as raised by Honorable Trin. If I can ask my colleagues to fill in where I would have left out some answers. Thank you, Chairperson. Colleagues, if you can raise hands. Mr. Sazona, there was an issue that was raised for the villages, for the parliamentary villages and the asbestos issues. Thank you, colleagues. If I can just get a show of hands. On who's first? I see Ms. Abrahams, Chairperson, if you can allow me, I can coordinate with my colleagues. Ms. Abrahams, who's responsible for EPWP.
I think DJ, just a minute. I also see Honorable Hicklin's hand. Can you lower it down, Honorable Hicklin? But we deal with the next round of questions after the responses. Yeah, thank you. You can continue, I think, DJ.
All right, thank you so much, Chairperson. In order, it will be Ms. Abrahams, who is responsible for EPWP, the CFO, Mr. Mandla Sithole, and Mr. Mzwandile Sazona, who's responsible for Prestige, Ms. Nanam Shongo, who's responsible for Policy, and Mr. Batu Mukotu, who's responsible for Construction. In that order, please. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Deputy Minister, and good morning, Chair. I would like to just cover the fact it was stated that there's possible anomalies. I think what we do have is quarter three report, and quarter three report on slide 26 indicates that there was matters related to the NPO program. If we look at the quarter four report, which is in slide 25, we find that particular matter is no longer there. And the reason why is because the matter was resolved. We as Public Works spend a lot of time with IDT to ensure that very specific contracts are drawn up. This was a point that was raised in the previous portfolio committee, and we managed to address that by providing a very comprehensive addendum. And when we look in the quarter three report, what we were simply saying there was that there was non-alignment with the plan and the agreement that we had with the IDT. And therefore, as the Department of Public Works, our responsibility is to ensure oversight and to ensure whatever is agreed to is then actioned. That continued, and we were able to achieve 100% both on the NPO program and 100% transfer on the management fees. There was a specific plan, especially in terms of the work opportunities, and those plans were successfully executed, as one would then see, even in what was related yesterday in the budget vote. When it comes to the next point in the quarter three report on the low spending in terms of the appointing of a service provider for the technical support contracts, this is a technical support we offer public bodies, particularly because there is lacking capacity in public, or lack of technical capacity in public bodies. And therefore, as public works, we augment and we provide support to public bodies. The delay there is an ECM challenge. It's not an EPWP challenge. The delay is therefore a matter that then obviously gets dealt with in the SEA perspective. We're aware that there were certain knock-on impacts, particularly because of the broader preferential procurement challenges that one had. In the absence, when one does not have a technical support contract, our staff as public works supports public bodies, giving them technical support. So it's not the branch that does not have technical capacity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'll respond for finance-related matters as guided by the acting DG. Chair, honourable members, we ask about the decrease of the budget, particularly in Programme 3. Chair, when we requested to address the issue of project preparation, because it's a presidential program, we had to look for funding because Treasury did not have the funding. So in line with the processes of budget, we had to find money where they were projected underspending. And out of EPWP then, we then took 12 million, which was then subjected to budget process through National Treasury. Then that was approved. Then the other money was taken in other programs, but I thought, let me explain why then there was a reduction. It was just 12 million out of about 3 billion of EPWP, but it was as a result of the projected underspending in that area. Then the other question that was asked by Honorable Member Hicklin around municipal services, I think the Honorable Member is correct. It is a concern because we pay municipalities on all accounts that we ought to pay. But the challenge with clients, they are not paying for services for different reasons. At some point, you'll want to check whether you must cut then the service, where then municipalities will have to suffer and it affects another service delivery because municipalities do need this money. However, there are interventions that have been put in place, Chairperson. We have engaged National Treasury as part of the intervention. Treasury has actually arranged meetings with significant clients, in particular defense and correctional services. We attended those meetings in the presence of Treasury, and Treasury was very clear in terms of the intervention. We are still following up on those meetings because clients made a lot of commitments. And I must say, Chair, as a result of those interventions, because I think there was another question also to say, what is the impact of the intervention that have been made? So in the current year, actually, there was a lot of improvement against the current year that we are reporting, where recovery rate was sitting at 85%. The challenge is the previous year, where actually, once you haven't recovered the money for previous years, it becomes difficult for any client because they are no longer having a budget for that amount that is coming from previous years. So it becomes a challenge then to recover such an amount. Hence, there is an intervention of National Treasury. However, I must say, Chair, there are also a number of instances where clients are disputing certain claims of which the branches are addressing such issues. Then let me see if there was another question. I think there was also a question from Honorable Member Tring about the underspending in general. I think we do acknowledge that, Chair. We have provided reasons for underspending, and all the DGs are here. But I must say, Chair, in terms of the overall spending, if you check throughout the quarters where we were underspending in certain areas, we are sitting at 97% spending for the main vote and 95% for PMTE, which really it's an improvement that we have seen through interventions that were put in place. However, any underspending, as the member has indicated, affects service delivery. It's something that we need to improve on, continue to improve, to make sure that service delivery is not affected. I think those are the only questions, Chair. Okay, the other thing, okay, I've already covered this one of the interventions on recovery. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Acting DG and the Chair. On prestige-related questions, there were two questions asked. First question asked by Honorable Siwisa on the infrastructure of events. We have just been delayed by, if the members still remember, the court decision wherein we had to change our forms because of the procurement policy. We are in the process now of putting that procurement on our procurement plan, and will continue throughout the year to do the procurement of infrastructure. There is infrastructure that we have already procured, and we are responding to Honorable Swiss's parliamentary question to that effect. On the prefab houses in Acacia, sorry, Chair, there was just a call coming through. On the prefab houses in Acacia Park, we're just about to go on procurement of the service provider. Then the Secretary to Parliament wanted now to do the project themselves, and there are discussions between the Department and Parliament as to who has to do that. Once we cleared that, we will go out on procurement, and within this year, we need to see a service provider on site. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Acting DG and Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will respond to the question relating to the Public Works Bill as well as the CIDB Bill. Indeed, Honourable Hicklin and Van Skalvik, I think we've had experienced delays in terms of these two bills. And the question was in terms of the new timelines. With the Public Works Bill, we have received the revised draft bill, which we have made input as a department and have made a submission through the office of the DG so that we can have a sector workshop to solicit inputs before then we can introduce to cabinet. And we anticipate that that would happen before the end of the second quarter in this financial year, Chairperson. And with regard to CIDB, we had advanced in terms of, because we had received about two inputs from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, of which the one that the latest that we received was in November last year, which we have considered, but there were two critical aspects to it. Was that we consult on aspects that we, or on one of the clauses on the draft bill, which makes reference to the levy that the CIDB will charge going forward. And we advise them to consult with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, which we have ultimately done, and they have confirmed that they have don't have any issues. And we're also, Chair, advised to consult with National Treasury with relating to the same clause. And National Treasury has raised a concern. We have had about two meetings with the National Treasury team. They have raised a concern in terms of that clause that it may require the provision of a money bill. So that is where then we are in discussion in terms of whether that clause should continue to be on the bill with the implications and also to look at alternatives. There were other alternatives that were provided by Treasury. So that is the meeting that we have had since last week, Chairperson. So once the issue that has been raised by National Treasury is resolved, then the cabinet memo will be submitted to the minister to then introduce the bill to cabinet. I think that is where, and we manage to resolve the national issue with CIDB by the end of this quarter, the memo would have been routed to the minister. Thank you very much, Acting DG and Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We hand back over to you.
Thank you, Acting DG and your team. I now invite follow-up questions from the honourable members. I can see Honourable Higgins' hand is up. Honourable Higgins.
Thank you so much, Chair. Yes, it just reverts back to the GBV question that I had, Chair. Ms. Morris, I submitted two particular questions relating to two specific properties in Tswane and was given wishy-washy answers. If I could ask you to please give me an email address which I could direct these two properties to you. They are in a severe state of disrepair. They are very, very needed by the community. The community is prepared to enter into a PPP with the Department of Public Works because DSD is not doing anything about it. I would greatly appreciate assistance because they are desperately needed as GBV hubs in the area where they are. I would greatly appreciate some assistance here. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Higlin. Can the officials please drop their hands? Nanam Songo Batu, can you please drop your hand? Someone who is near it, yeah, thank you. Honourable Sewisa?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair, I was listening to the responses. Can the department commit, when are we going to get the list that I was requesting via the response must be sent via, because I think all of us were interested in that list of that they requested. So can they commit, when are we going to get? I would prefer if we can get, because I think the data is with them. They have the data with them, especially when it comes to the 100 unutilized vacant properties that the minister was speaking about yesterday. So they must have the database there. Can we get the commitment that we'll get the response by the 31st of May? Because all of us were interested in whatever these projects and these properties that they're talking about. Because one thing I know that I've sent a question to ask about the issue of the flood victims in KZN. And it hasn't even finalized that there's property, that there's still a long process before it can be finalized, that there will be properties identified to be handed over to human settlement for those people to be built in proper houses, because they've been staying in different places and there's a rental that is being paid. They are being moved from one place to the other. They are being put in flats. They are being put in temporary structures, and the process hasn't been finished. So I'm really interested in those 100 unutilized and the projects that have been done that are completed, some of them over budgeted, some of them in within the set period of time. So can the department please make it a priority that by the 31st we must get that list, so that we can also go and do oversight on our own in our spare time, so that we can go there, because I think all of us have got constituencies in all different provinces. So wherever we are or wherever we find ourselves, whether visiting friends or families, we can always go to those sites and see what's going on there. So it's very important, because we are going to wait for another report that is going to tell us that we still haven't, there are certain projects that haven't been completed, or
that the 100 unutilized properties that have been spoken about, there are all these hiccups that are happening there. So I would like that commitment from the department, because it's vague. It's only that you are going to send them, they don't tell us where. So I think in this meeting, we must just put the date and say on the 31st of May, because the information is there. They can even do it after this meeting, because the information is in their office. There's no commitment that the minister can do on public platform. And then they are still going to look for the locations of those properties. So the list that I can say is that by the 31st, can we get the list? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Siwisa. In addition, is that when they are just giving us this list, not saying only in Cape, the province, the district, and the local municipality. I think the Honorable Siwisa is raising this because it's an item that we have raised several times, unutilized properties. Some are being used by the gangsters to commit crimes. It's something that we have said several times, but you brought it now. But I think that information, it's in your fingertips, so we need to get it. Over to you, Acting DG.
All right. Thank you so much, Chairperson. The 31st of May is reasonable. We will submit accordingly the information as requested. Honorable Hicklin, please drop me an email. I'll make a follow-up on the properties that you were referring to. I think Mr. Mukotu perhaps was a delayed response from an earlier question. I'm not sure if his hand was a legacy hand or he wanted to say something. But other than that, I think we should be done, unless we missed something, Chairperson. Thank you.
Did you just before we close, you mentioned, especially in the IGR for quarter four, that there is a copy of the technical minimum sector report. It would assist us in doing our oversight work if you can provide us with that information. As you provide us with what has been requested by members, but it would also assist us to do our oversight. So thank you. On that note, I don't know whether the TM would like to say just a few words if she is still in the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, mine would be that I've been listening from the beginning of the meeting, and I've carefully also listened to the inputs of the members of the Portfolio Committee and their questions. Now, mine, Chair, I want to say that since we've arrived at the department, like I've said in previous committee meetings, is that there are definitely things, Chair, that needs to be changed around for this department to deliver on many aspects on what the department is supposed to deliver. I'm just going to make a few comments, Honorable Chair, that EPWP definitely needs a change around strategy on how it gets implemented. The IDT has done very well in what they have implemented in terms of EPWP, but I'm sure that the officials who are running EPWP in the department know that it's an everyday song from me that we need to change around the strategy. We need to increase the numbers. We also need to change around on how we implement the project and who we use to implement the project and how they get aligned to what we do for us being in the built environment and being a technical a department itself. Also, Chair, I would agree with you and the committee as well that in terms of how we actually say that we can confidently answer to anybody and say that we have a reliable, conclusive asset register. I'm always debating on that too as well. I hear the committees asking questions, but for me it's to say that we need to separate what we really deem is on the asset register and what we are not sure of, because surely there are people who are every day coming up and saying, there's a pocket of land here, there's a piece of land here. And if we do not have a digitized system from our procurement to our asset register, to us being able to, when you are sitting in Pretoria, that you are able to look at a site in Cape Town, in KZN, in Limpopo, in Northwest, anywhere where we are delivering a project, whether it's a police station, it's a prison, whether it's a high court, we must be able to, from where we are seated, to be able to look at the progress of the project, to see what is happening on site. And for me, we can sit here and give each other all the nice stories on paper. But I am saying to this honorable members and this portfolio committee that if we do, this department is huge. So if you want to run 11 regions, you want to run 1,100 projects and we are not digitized, I just think that we'll keep on sitting and talking and promising the portfolio committee, and the portfolio committee will be saying ever since we arrived, we've been asking for this, for this. We have only been here for 2 months, but I can tell you, Honorable Chair, that there's a lot of work to be done on top of the work that is being presented here. To say we have achieved so much percent, I'm very phobic to scorecards that only talk English, but I'm alive to the real-time issues that must be implemented. If we are told that there are 10 sites, we must be able to take the portfolio committee without thinking twice. If you say to us tomorrow, Honorable Chair, that you want to go to all the GBV sites, we must not be telling you that give us 3 weeks to prepare. We are preparing what? If officials say there are 10 sites, we must go to them. Get into a combi, go and see the sites, so that we are able to hold each other accountable to things that we are presenting, but we must be sure they are there. And I'm a person that believes that if officials work without being able to show us before and after photos, I'm also phobic to that. People must be able to say there was a piece of grass here, there is now a building here, are the photos. And there was a comment as well around project management. I've heard the officials talking nicely here, saying that upgrading, going to school. You see, there is a difference around a project manager who is aligned on what is happening in their organization. I'm not talking only public works, Honorable Chair. A project manager is a person that is supposed to tell us from A to Z what is happening, where, at which time. Now, it's unfortunate that I have to say this, Honorable Chair, that as long as we do not have digitization, we are going to have what we have in terms of sites being abandoned by contractors, which we are grappling with now at DPWI, purely because it's magic for me to hear that one project manager can oversee 7 projects in different provinces. So that is where I'm coming with. As long as you are not digitized, to be able to look, and these things are not things that will start at DPWI. There are many institutions that are in the construction industry who are even managing projects on site from their phones. You look at an app. Now, I am saying if we are digitized, Honorable Hickman was going to tell us where are your GBV sites. We're going to tell her, please go on to our app. It is located here, and it was going to show you a picture. It was going to show you an address. It was going to show you when we signed the agreement with the social development. So those are the things I am raising, Chair. And for me, the other thing is that as long as officials are used to the old story they are used to, and they are not prepared to come on board that things must be done differently. We are always going to be coming here, and the officials are going to be presenting honorable chair, honorable members, and we are always going to be searching with the same thing. Because for me, what is important is that when we are reporting that we have achieved, it must not be for us to fulfill a scorecard. It must be because when we go to the specific people that we have been servicing, they will be saying that we got this service in time and this has happened. Same with EPWP. We have been talking about an exit strategy. We just hear it on paper. I am yet to see when the practicality of us is explained to us to say, when somebody exits this program, this is the exit strategy, this will have happened. But I think that we welcome your oversight, honorable members of the portfolio committee, and we are prepared to turn things around and not just come to the portfolio committee and go back to our spaces and then not do what we're supposed to do. So we take your questions and your inputs very seriously, and that the officials concerned through the acting DG are going to respond in the specific time, and that the reports and information you are asking for will be provided to this committee. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you so much, Deputy Minister, for those closing remarks, especially the last one, that all the questions raised in the committee, then the responses should come to the committee. I just wanted to correct that one, especially Acting DG saying that they will respond to Honorable Hicklin. They had to respond to the committee, and then, yeah, Honorable Hicklin will get it. So please correct that. Let's appreciate the report that you presented to us and the responses, comments that you have given when the honorable members of the portfolio committee were asking questions. Appreciate the way that this committee always conducts itself when probing questions and all that. But on the issue DM of the prefab and asbestos roof, which is a health hazard that was declared long ago, especially in Acacia Park. I want you to follow that up. We were told in March 2020 that this is the money, the contractor is coming in, only to be reported to in 2021 when we did the oversight visit. No, these are the houses that we're doing, not the prefabs and all this. We are told another story today. We will take the story as we are told, but I want you to follow that one up. It may not be done in this term, but in the next term, the asbestos roof is not accepted anywhere in South Africa. Thank you, the department, Lwazi Ben, not Lwazi Mashangu, our acting committee secretary. Can we then deal with the next item, which are the minutes of the last meeting?
Noted, Chairperson.
Honorable members, these are the minutes of the last meeting that we held last week when we were dealing with the follow-up on the issue of the petition, which was submitted by Honorable Podlani to the Parliament and then referred to us as this portfolio committee. Just want to check with members whether are these the true reflection of what we discussed in the last meeting. Honourable Member.
Name is not there, Chair.
Honourable Higgins.
Honourable Sitlolo's name is not present, or did I miss it?
No, it's not here. Can you please edit? Yeah, it's not here. It ought to be just below Honorable Higlin's name. You correct Honorable Higlin. Honorable Sitlolo's name is not here, and he was part of the meeting. Mr. If you are saying miss, it ought to be Mr. Mr. Thank you. Any other issue, honorable members? May I then have a mover for the adoption of these minutes?
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Hicklin. Honorable Hicklin moves for the adoption of the minutes. May I have a seconder?
I'll second, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Van Skalvik is seconding the motion that we adopt the minutes. Thank you so much. Honorable members, on announcements, I will share with you in the group. We have received a letter from Honorable Samantha Graham Murray, who was part of us since 2019, a letter glowing with appreciation of the part that she played in the committee, what she has learned. It's something that I cannot keep to myself. I think I need to mention that. But also, we also appreciate the time that we spent with her. It was good. We also learned a lot from her as part of her contribution to the committee. We wish her so well in the new position that she is occupying. So I will share with you and then respond. I didn't respond because I wanted to share that letter with you. I will share with you in the group, honorable members. I think we must always share when there are such nice things said about our committee. The meeting, we'll have the meeting on the 30th, the one finishing up what we discussed on the issue of the Honorable Bodlani's petition. We'll do that on the 30th, honorable members. It will be virtual. We're looking forward to having a physical meeting on the 7th of June. We will by then be through with all the mini plenaries that are currently happening in Parliament. And we will only have that meeting if the issue of the sound and all that is done. So we are currently looking for a venue and asking that ICT of Parliament ensures that everything. Remember when we requested to do a physical meeting because we were told that we must do physical meeting, only to find that when we were in the venue, the ICT was not working. In fact, the sound, especially not the sound. It was the camera. Yeah, they were not working. And as such, that particular meeting, the only recording that was done, it was done by the devices that we had, but there was nothing. So we're looking at that 7th of June, but we will inform the honorable members if that is not possible, then we'll have a virtual meeting. But write it down, 7th June, having a physical meeting. We'll try to have physical meetings maybe once in a quarter till we can be allowed to have physical meeting every Wednesday. Honorable Hicklin?
Chair, just a question. Do we have any further announcement or advice about what is happening with our trip to Canada? Is it actually going to happen? Only reason I'm asking is, as I mentioned to you in a private conversation, the chances, yes, the issues of actually getting visas is quite sticky in terms of getting to Canada. And I just think if it is going to happen, we do need to prepare in advance.
Oh, okay. Ms. Martinez, unfortunately, doesn't attend our meetings due to this issue of acting as ad hoc committee secretary. So the committee section in Parliament removed her from our meetings. Though I have asked the House Chair, why is a person who is in ad hoc removed from the primary responsibility of being a committee secretary of a certain committee? I have not yet received Frolic said that he was going to ask the head of the committee why is Ms. Martinez taken out. From what I have heard from Mr. Denzin and Ms. Martinez when we had a main call last week, is that they are advanced in terms of the preparations. The correspondence has gone to the Embassy of Canada, and they have appreciated even the detailed way of what we wanted to see them in that country. And then they said they were going to respond. I will check if there is anything that needs to be reported. I will do that. I have informed Ms. Martinez that of what you said, Honorable Hicklin, that when it comes to the visa application in Canada, it takes long, so they must try to expedite everything. I will do that. I can just communicate with you, Honorable members, even in the group. Thank you so much. On that note, honorable members, let me again appreciate the way that you deliberated yesterday in the budget vote, the way you deliberated today when we're dealing with the third and fourth quarter performance report of the department, and the way that you are making it so easy to chair this committee, how you contribute, how you behave, always professional, always with the decorum of the parliament. We really appreciate that. I know we had challenges earlier on with Lazi experiencing some technical glitches, so that we started a meeting a little bit late and they were resolved. No one shouted, but you accepted that we have some technical glitches. Thank you, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned. See you in the plenary. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.